Well, a lawn can be the white space around flowers or trees, or it can be the centerpiece of a home landscape and nice and big and green. And I tell you what, you've got sporting fields, you got parks, and a lot of other cemeteries, a lot of other open spaces that require turf. As a matter of fact, I'm a kind of a Brewers fan, love to go to those games, and you look at the grass at the major league parks, and it's actually quite something to see. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for stopping by for this edition of Garden Talk. Our guest, Doug Soldat, with us today is going to help you out with your lawn or your green area. He's an associate professor of soil science at UW-Madison, specializes in turf grass, and always has great information to share about taking care of your lawn. And so it's great to have him along. You can join in. I see we already have Pete and Tom are already online here waiting to ask their questions. Well, you can ask one too at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And we'd certainly look forward to hearing from you. And Doug, welcome back. Good to have you back.
Thanks for having me. Great to be back, Larry.
You know, I'm looking at my lawn, and it is dark green, and it's growing.
For sure. Yeah, we're probably starting to think about mowing around at my neighborhood, too. I mean, it's getting tall and green, and it's ready.
I'm trying to find somebody in my neighborhood that sharpens lawnmower blades, because I think mine probably needs it, and I know you're a big proponent
That's
of a sharp
favorite
blade.
Thing. Yeah, absolutely. I think so. A lot of hardware stores will do them. I think if you just go ask around, the small hardware stores, the big ones, a lot of them have blade sharpening services, or the small engine repair shops for sure will do them. So there's a lot of places you can find to do it.
And it's really important.
For sure. So here's the thing. I mean, mowing is a stress. And that's the thing you do to your lawn most often is you mow it. And so that's what makes lawns special, but it's also a stress. And so if you cut yourself, you'd rather have a nice, sharp, clean cut than a dull one. And the grasses are the same way. A dull mower blade is just going to tear the tips of the grass off. You have to use more water, more fertilizer to keep it looking healthy. So mowing sharp can do wonders. Just sharpen that blade every year.
And there's ways to tell if your blade is not sharp, isn't that right?
Yeah, exactly. So the telltale signs are these little white fibers that stick out the end. So a day or two after you mow, just get down on hands and knees and look at the tips of those blades. And if you see any white fibers hanging out the end, that's a sign that your mower blade is too dull.
Okay. And can you do it yourself?
Yeah, you can. If you have a bench grinder, I mean, you want to be known, you have to know what you're doing. But it's something you can do if you have some experience with that.
I had a friend who did it, but then when he put the blades back on, he put them backwards.
Yeah, that's
and it's I said, hey, you're not the only one.
Exactly.
You're definitely not the only one to do that.
Yeah.
And he felt a little foolish, but I probably would have done the same thing.
Right. And if your blade is dull, it might not even make a difference. I mean, your sharp blade is really, really important.
Oh, man. Any other kinds of equipment in terms of tools that relate to the lawn that we
I would say so the two most important things are both related to mowing. So having a sharp mower blade is one. Another way you can do it is buy two blades. So a lot of times, like, I'm thinking I gotta mow my lawn, and I also think I also have to sharpen my blade, and those two things are incompatible. So if you have two sets, you can change it out right away, then you have the whole year to sharpen that other one. But the second most important thing is mow high. The higher you mow, the better your lawn is going to be. You're going to need less irrigation. There's going to be fewer weeds. The grass is going to just look a lot healthier. So the shorter you mow, the worse it's going to look.
And you're saying like 4 inches?
Yeah, 3.5, 4. I mean, everybody's got a different threshold, but 3 inches is kind of our minimum that we want to see people mowing at. If you can tolerate a 4-inch cut, go for it.
How can you tell exactly if it's 3 inches or 4 inches?
Yeah, some of the mowers will say, they'll say set it, you know, if you have the wheels set at this height, it's going to be this high. You can also just use a ruler. After you mow it, just kind of stick the ruler down on the grass and see how high it is.
Yeah, makes good sense. Well, Pete in Milwaukee has a question for you. Pete, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a problem with crabgrass. I almost feel like I need to cut my grass right now. It looks green, but the crabgrass is maybe 5 or 6 inches taller than the regular grass. Now, I did put on Scott's crabgrass fertilizer last week, but it had already started. Am I supposed to do this while it's still snowing out beforehand, or how do I need to?
Sure, yeah. So, Pete, this is a really common misconception here. So, I think what you're talking about is actually quack grass. So, quack grass is a grass that grows really early in the spring and it's really long. Crabgrass is actually something that doesn't even germinate yet, doesn't even show up until midsummer.
Can you spell that?
Yeah, so quack, Q-U-A-C-K, grass, one word. And it's absolutely one of the worst weeds to have. So that's the bad news, is that it has these really deep underground stems that we call rhizomes, and it regenerates from them. There's no herbicide on the market that's going to selectively take it out, meaning it'll kill the quackgrass but not kill your lawn. So the recommendations for getting rid of quackgrass are basically dig it up or kill the entire area with Roundup. And both of those are not perfect because the quackgrass is so aggressive that it'll come back from those buried underground stems. So it's a really tough problem. But if you go Google quackgrass and you can read up on it a bit and see what you're dealing with, and then I'd be happy to talk more with you about it when you get some questions.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Tom and Kimberly, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I have a question. I have a lot of dead spots in my lawn from my dog going out and going to the bathroom.
Yep.
And what's the best way to bring that back? Do I have to dig that out and replant seed, or how do I do that?
What size would you say these areas are?
Like the size of a pie?
Chicken pox. There's a lot of spots all over. Some of them are 2 feet in diameter.
Okay, so I would say for 2 feet, that's maybe about the limit where I'd say maybe you want to rake that up and reseed it. The smaller ones that are about the size of a dinner plate or something, those the Kentucky bluegrass is going to grow back and fill those in during the spring. So it'll look bad for a while, but that'll come back. When you start getting spots that are about 2 feet in diameter, that might take all year to grow back. So then I would recommend that you kind of rake up the dead material, scratch the soil, put down some seed, and then kind of cover in that seed with maybe some new soil or a little bit of compost, and then you should grow some new grass.
Water it there.
Yeah, water it if you need to. Usually spring's a good time because we get consistent
rain.
Yeah,
so much water there already.
But yeah, if you need to, water it.
All right.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling, Jim. Appreciate it. Tom. Jim is next. Jim from Oshkosh. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It seems like most people call in have small little lots in the city and you give them advice. What advice can you give for me who has 2+ acres of lawn other than just mowing it high?
What are you looking for? What are your goals?
Well, my goal is to make it look beautiful, but when you have 2 acres, you can't water it, and you can't. Sure, you can spray it for dandelions and so forth, but you can't fertilize it. It's just too expensive.
Yeah. So, that's a tough thing, and that's 2 acres is a big area to maintain. The things we already covered: keep the blade sharp, mow it high, and then the third thing I would say for a healthy lawn is to provide that fertility that keeps the grass dense and that keeps the weeds out. So if you're unwilling or unable to fertilize it, that's going to be difficult to keep that looking healthy. I would say there's probably, maybe you can find some inexpensive sources of fertilizer rather than the stuff right off the shelf. If you can find, composts are difficult to apply, but alternative sources, usually they're waste products that are being marketed as fertilizers. But I think if you can try to be real savvy looking for an economical fertilizer, that's your next best step.
And you're going to be looking at what, twice a year, three times a year?
Well, I would just start with once. If budget's an issue, I would be putting down that fertilizer application right about September, mid to late September.
What about these machines that punch these holes in? Would that be beneficial to a large yard?
Aerification, so that's a process where you're pulling these little soil plugs out. And I would say that's really important for these small city lots that get a lot of traffic. But on 2 acres, probably the only traffic that you're getting for most of it is just your mowing activities. So I wouldn't think that would be really beneficial. In your case, you're probably your main issue is not enough fertility to keep the grass dense to keep the weeds out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll give it some thought. Thank you so much for your program.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And of course, there's you got 2 acres. There's you can take some of that out along.
Yeah, right. Exactly. If you don't need all of it, no reason to maintain it. Or you can have a section where you do fertilize it regularly, and you have kind of different uses.
Yeah,
that's a good plan.
Sarah in Madison up next. By the way, we have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly with your lawn question at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Sarah, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a question. My lawn over the last few years has gotten kind of lumpy, and I'm wondering what causes that and if there's anything that you can do about it. It's just, sort of bumps all around in the backyard.
Yeah, that's there's a lot of things that cause lawns to be lumpy. So frost heave is one, just the natural processes of rocks and the soil shifting when the soil freezes and thaws or becomes really wet and really dry. You have a lot of biological activity, earthworms and moles and voles and all these different animals that can burrow and tunnel that can cause lumps. Probably the freeze thaws are the most consistent or causing most of it. As for dealing with it, it's tough because the main solution is to roll it, to get some type of device that you can smash down those bumps. But that also compacts the lawn at the same time, and that can cause some problems with more shallow rooting. So if it's something that's really bothering you, that's what you want to do. You want to roll it. But then
something you can rent?
I think so.
A to Z type places.
Yeah, and it's usually they're as simple as just a drum that you fill with water from the garden hose and you just walk back and forth over the lawn. And you want to do it sort of when the soil's pretty moist because then it's easier to compact. But again, you're causing a stress. Soils don't, the grass doesn't like to grow in those compacted soils. So I really only recommend it if the bumps is really bothering you.
Can you sort of even it out by putting some topsoil in?
Yeah, that would be another way for probably bigger bumps and bigger topography differences. You can actually put soil down on top in the low spots and try to bring it up that way. But for these smaller bumps that are kind of just randomly all over, rolling is probably the easiest way to get rid of them.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks, Sarah. Thank you very much for calling. Talking today with Doug Soldat, Associate Professor of Soil Science at the UW-Madison. He teaches, among other things, turf grass, nutrient, and water management. We're going to talk with him some more about water management. And we're going to take your questions, too, at 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, Milwaukee-based gardening expert Melinda Myers joins us, and she's going to share some goof-proof plants for Wisconsin gardens. And that's next week on Garden Talk. Right now we're talking with Doug Soldat from the UW-Madison about your lawn and lawn care. Join in, 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or maybe post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page for that. And if you've got a cool photo of your lawn or the area, I would love to see that as well. And you can post that on our Facebook page. Marcus in Green Bay up next. Hi, Marcus. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I live on the east side of Green Bay, an area where it's very sandy soil. And last year, the cottonwoods, we have a whole bunch of cottonwoods, the leaves piled up and then they got matted down by the rain, and I believe that it killed a lot of the lawn. And so I'm asking, how could we maybe repair this? What's the best process? And then also you mentioned before about the grass height, but in sandy soils, should the grass be mowed tall?
Yeah, okay. Great questions, Marcus. So I'm a little skeptical that that grass is dead. My guess is what happened is that those leaves fell down, it got wet, and it was like the perfect environment for what we call snow mold fungus. And probably, and snow mold will like eat all the leaves and the grass leaves, turn up totally brown. And it also keep the soil nice and cold and wet. So what I would do is get those leaves off of there now, mow them up, whatever you can do, rake them, and then just wait. Wait for it to warm up and then see. I think what you're going to see is a lot of that lawn growing back.
Okay.
So that, I think...
Can I mention this? In those areas where I think it's dead, the grass is extremely brown, and then there's little patches of green where... they seeded over the last few years or did something. It's a different type of grass. So, yeah, I mean, keep going with what you're saying, but there's like super brown looking dead, not dormant, but dead.
Yeah.
And then there's vibrant green.
Yeah, okay, well, so just like we talked about quackgrass earlier, Kentucky bluegrass has these underground stems that often survive even when the top gets killed off. So it's the best time to seed is in the fall. So I would say this year, just see if it kind of nurses itself back to health. And if not, you want to seed in the fall, right about August 15th through September 15th. You want to reseed those totally dead areas. And with a sandy soil, I'm going to recommend you plant either a tall fescue or a fine fescue. And those do the best in those sandy soils. And you want to address your earlier question, you want to mow them as high as possible. That's even more important on sandy soils because that encourages deeper rooting and gives them more access to water.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Marcus. Appreciate it. And Judy in Door County, it's your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
My question is about moss in our lawn.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way to remove that? Dig it up? Is there something that you can put on it? It was particularly bad after, not this year, but the previous year with the winter we had. So,
Moss is a really difficult one. It's this silvery thread moss is probably the species that you have, and that's the stuff that you ever see growing on top of rooftops. So it can do full sun, totally dry. It's also stuff you'll find growing like in a swamp with no light. So it's one of these species that just can survive anywhere. And so it's opportunistic. When it has a gap, when there's an opportunity like bare soil, that's when it fills in. So the reason it's there is because the turf thinned out or died. So that's the primary problem you want to correct. If you just kill the moss or dig it up and without fixing the problem to have a healthy lawn, the moss is going to come right back. But that said, things that get rid of moss, probably digging is the best way. Another way is to spray dish soap on it, surprisingly. Just Dawn dish soap mixed with water. You spray that and that will kill the moss. But if you don't have, if you don't create an environment to grow grass there, it's just going to come right back.
Okay.
So what is, maybe can you tell me about why, you know, is it shady or what's the problem for growing grass, do you think?
Well, I think the soil was compromised during the winter with the plow and possibly damaged the grass that was there.
Okay.
It's partially shady, but it's also in other parts of our backyard where it does get sun.
Sure.
So as you said... it's pretty opportunistic if the soil, I guess.
So if you just, you know, repair those areas, maybe put some sod down, seed down, encourage the grass to grow healthy, that's what's going to keep the moss out long term.
Yep.
But you do have to get in there and dig it out.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Does it have those rhizomes, like, or is it... will it spread?
No, it doesn't really spread that way. So it's more you just want to physically remove the moss that you
Especially
see.
If you got one of those tough garden rakes.
Yeah.
You can just not the long spindly ones, but the do they call those rakes? You know what I mean, the short ones.
Yeah.
The short bladed ones that are
stiff.
That are stiff.
Right.
Those you can almost peel it.
Yeah, it's just rooted right on the surface of the soil.
You can almost peel it right off.
Okay, peel it right off. All right. Thank you, guys. Always a pleasure.
All right, Judy. Thank you very much for calling. I've actually done that. I on a previous house that I owned.
Yeah.
I was surprised how easy it came up.
Yep.
Yeah, I just raked it right off.
Raked it right off.
We have John and Waniwak up next. Hi, John.
Hi. I've got a question about controlling broadleaf weeds in a lawn without using a product that contains 2,4-D because the lawn is adjacent to a large planting of grapes that are very sensitive to even off-gassing of 2,4-D. One product I found that could be used is chelated iron, which wouldn't affect the grapes, and it will kill the broadleaf, but it's really expensive.
Yeah.
I was wondering if there's a cheaper alternative to the iron or cheaper iron I can find or some other solution.
Yeah, unfortunately, that product is really expensive, and you're right. So it kills the weeds with just an overdose of iron, and I'm not sure why those products are so priced.
Why
are
they so expensive?
I think they're just
because they can get that price.
They can get that price, and you need a lot. You need to put down a lot of iron, so you're buying a lot of product. But no, and I don't know of a. I'm sure there probably is an herbicide that grapes will be less sensitive to, but I don't know what that would be. You want to check with the folks who know what grapes are more or less sensitive to. But you know, that I was going to say before you even said it, I think that iron product would be a good choice.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
you know yeah. The other thing, John, I'll say is granular. So you're talking about spray and drift. You can find granular broadleaf herbicides that are going to minimize that drift or basically eliminate the drift. They're less effective, but that would be another option you may consider.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, it's not only drift of the spray that causes it, but apparently the 2,4-D, even from granular.
Some
kind of off gas
volatilization, yeah, sure. Okay.
Volatilization, exactly. And since grapes are so extremely sensitive to that, I'm
yeah, you know what? I would just, if the iron's out of the budget, maybe just mow it high and maybe try to increase the fertilization a little bit, get it more dense, mow it a little bit more often, and that might reduce your weed
levels. Hopefully
it
would help.
Over time.
Yeah, good luck, John. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And I want to give Nancy in Grafton a chance to join us. Hi, Nancy.
Well, good morning.
Morning.
My husband cuts the lawn for a neighbor across the street, and she had some company come in, and what in the heck they did with that lawn, I don't know, but this is a couple years ago already, and in the spring of the year, most of her lawn is yellow, and it takes a long time before the green can come through again, but part of the area, the grass is real, real soft, like almost like velvet. And somebody said that might be zoysia grass.
Zoysia grass. That's exactly what I was thinking when you said yellow. That was the first thought that came to my head.
Is there anything you can do with that anymore, or is that it?
Wait till June.
Wait till June, or dig it up and plant a new lawn.
So I usually say it's not appropriate for Wisconsin, and when I say that on the radio, I usually get about 5 emails from people who love it and say, no, it's the best grass. So it's a warm season grass. It'll be completely yellow from, you know, October all the way through May, but then it greens up in the summer, and it's dense, and it keeps the weeds out, and it looks nice. But this spring period, it's really, really brown and dormant. There's really nothing you can do to help it green up. It just needs the warmer temperatures.
And another thing is, I've got these kind of like bluebell plants in my flower bed, and they're like weeds. And I try to dig them out, and the roots go down really deep. And by golly, if they're all up again. You know, they're maybe about four inches high now, and my tulips are all over. Could I take a weed killer and take some cloth or something and just wipe those crazy bluebell things that I don't like?
Are they bluebell?
Crawl all over.
Violets? Violets, maybe.
No, they're not violets. They get high. They'll get maybe, they can go up 3 feet high, and they can have little blue flowers on them, like little bells. And I don't know how to get rid of them. I've been trying for a couple years or more.
And what do they go away right away in the spring?
No, they'll keep growing. They're
but if you mow them, you're going to kill them if you mow them, right?
I'm not going to mow them because I've got a big circle and I've got tulips in there and I've got other plants in there. But it's these things that I try to dig them out, and you can dig way down deep, and it's just like a mesh, like a screen of the roots are so thick.
Yeah,
and, what kind of prairie plant?
I don't need those things. How can I get rid of them?
Well, you can, you know, you had an idea there with the by taking a something like Roundup.
Roundup, yeah.
Would that work?
Well, you got to be careful with it.
Well, I don't want to kill my other plants that I got in there. I just want to get rid of those doggone things.
Yeah, that's understandable. I think that's probably the only thing I could think of as well as what Larry mentioned. But so if they're tulips, they kind of go away. And mowing is one of the best weed control strategies. So if your other plants aren't, you know, they're down or you're not worried about them, mowing is going to help. But sounds like that might not be an option for you.
How many are? I mean, there's lots. Oh, if you just cut them off. If you kept cutting them off, you'd kill them eventually.
Yeah.
And then you wouldn't have...
Well, we'll try, but I think the Roundup is probably a better idea. Because I got rose bushes and things like that in that same flower bed. So, you know, cutting them like a lawn, that wouldn't work. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Well, good luck. Thanks.
Give it a try.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. That sounds like a tough one there. Facebook question from Tim, who says, I'm in a life-or-death battle with Japanese knotweed, and after intense herbicide applications, I'm left with large areas of dead lawn. What's the best practice for replanting grass there?
You know, my favorite way to get grass is to sod.
And yeah, so me too.
I think that is absolutely one of the most underutilized way. And what we do is seeding grass is really challenging. There's a lot of things that can go wrong, especially in the spring. And people like to do it because it's less expensive. But if you factor in all the time and effort that you put forth and all the times it fails and you have to redo it, I don't think anything can beat sodding. So that's my first recommendation, is think about sodding it. Now, aside from that, if you've killed it with Roundup, it's absolutely safe to seed immediately into the area. You can put down grass seed and fertilizer. Make sure you get that soil covering that. Tamp it down. Put some mulch on top of it, and then watch it grow. Spring's tough because a lot of weeds will want to come back. Maybe some of that Japanese knotweed will come back. Fall is the best time to do it. But in spring, I would say my top recommendation is think about sodding it.
Oh, yeah. It's so... And you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and you prepare the soil the same way as like you're about to seed it, right? So remove all the dead vegetation, till it up a little bit, and then put the sod on that nicely tilled soil.
Mason in New Auburn, your turn. Hi, Mason.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I got two winters ago, we had all that snow, and then it was a really wet spring and all that. And a big area of my pasture, probably, I don't know, 50 by 100 or so, was flooded all summer long. It was about 2-3 feet deep.
Oh.
And, you know, this has never happened before. It was just we had so much rain.
Yeah.
And so now everything out in my pasture is basically, it's all brown and dead. And I don't know if it's going to come back or not. You know, I mean, it finally disappeared here, you know, during the last, you know, well, springtime. But, you know, what should I put out there to try to reseed it? You know, and it's a horse pasture, too. So I'm not sure what I should really do with it.
So, and you want to keep it as a horse pasture that they
correct,
would?
Correct. Yeah, it is our horse pasture.
And you're hoping to have some nutrients from the pasture for the horses?
Well, yeah, the horses go out there and they eat the grass and all that. We have like three separate little pastures for them, and we rotate them around. So as the grass grows up in the pasture,
okay,
you know, they eat it down. We move it to another spot.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. For the specific species that you want to use, that's probably not my. Not my forte when you get into what's best for feeding them. But in terms of when you figure that out, what the right mix is, probably the best way is just, do you have a tiller, tractor?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd take me
a hand tiller
2 days to do that. Yeah, I mean, it'd take a long time.
Well, let me tell you the two options. Tilling it up by hand is one, and then putting the seed down and raking the seed in. The other option, which might be quicker, is rent they call it a slit seeder. And this has tiny little discs in it about an inch apart, and you know, it's self-propelled, and you put the seed in the hopper, and then it plants the seed in these little slits. If you do that in two directions, like a diamond pattern, you'll get really good success from that. So you can rent these slit seeders at rental places.
Okay, all right. Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I'd go that way.
Yeah.
Yep. Good luck, Mason. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Got an email from Jason, who has an area 15 by 15. He's in Appleton. Surrounding a tree that we hauled fresh soil into last spring to attempt to plant grass. About half of it is grass growing in it, but half of it is still just ground. Besides manually scraping every little bare area and replanting seeds, are there any other options for successfully replanting this area without disturbing the grass that's already there?
Yep, this is really common. This is a reason I like sodding, is because this is a typical something that happens when you reseed, is you get some of the seed grows and some doesn't, and you're left with kind of this mismatch. So one thing you could do is what we just talked about. Get a slit seeder, and then that won't kill the existing vegetation. It'll kind of seed right into it. The other option would be to take like a compost or a soil mix and then top dress that, put a thin layer on top, and then put more seeds on top, and then do it like a sandwich, put more of that soil and compost on top, and then that'll help those seeds germinate. If you just go out and throw seeds, you know, all over the area, they're not going to survive. They need that seed-to-soil contact. So I'd say slit seeding or maybe that sandwich trick are the two things I would think about.
Yeah, it depends. Some of it depends on the tree, too, because you got a tree with roots that are right at the surface.
Right under the surface, yeah, that could be an issue.
That could be an issue. So you didn't say what kind of tree you had that's creating the issue. And sometimes a little mulch better than the grass.
Right.
You want to hang on to that tree because that grass is competing, if I'm not mistaken. Grass is going to take a lot of moisture away from the tree, is it not?
Well, I think, I was thinking the tree was removed. So
no, it's surrounding the tree.
Yeah, this is, okay. Now Larry's exactly right. That's a tree, it's hard to grow grass around trees because there's so much competition for that water. And there's also the shade issue too. So pretty common that you're having trouble. Fine fescue is what you want. So, and you can get that in a sod as well. So try the things we talked about. If it's, you know, mulch is a good option too sometimes.
Yeah, with me, I'd be putting some mulch down because it depends on the tree.
It does, yeah. Every site's different. Yep.
Yeah, everyone's
If you want to put a picture on Facebook, maybe I can give you a better response after the show.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Don in Warren, Illinois, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. We have a bermed house. You know what I'm talking about? We have walls on the east and west side, and it's dirt up to the eaves.
Sure.
So it's a 5-12 pitch.
Okay.
It's steep. It's suicidal to take the tractor up there.
Right.
So we round up twice last fall, got the garden hose out, burned it off this spring, raked it up, put in from the prairie nursery, we got some no-mo fescue. We put it down, covered it with straw, been watering it ever since. What are we going to run into?
Should run into some nice no-mo grass. That's what you should run into.
Did it come up?
Not yet.
When did you seed it?
About 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Yeah, it's gonna take some time and some warm temperatures, and usually fescues are they're big seeds, they're pretty vigorous when you seed them. So my guess is that it's gonna start to come up and look pretty good. The thing I like about those no-mo fine fescues is they have basically a natural herbicide that they exude from their roots, and usually when you plant them, you don't get a lot of weed encroachment. So I think it sounds like it's gonna work.
Yeah, no, yeah. Just be a little more patient, Don.
All right. Hope for some warm weather.
Yeah, hope for warm weather, a little sun. Bill in Appleton. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a problem in our backyard. About 6 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, we had 6 or 7 tall cottonwood trees that we removed. And we had the as much of the trunks in that that could be ground out, we did. I put a garden in that area and also added some lawn in there. And the past 2.5 years, I've started to get a fungus or mushroom-like things coming up out of the ground. I'm thinking it might be because the roots or the remains are kind of fostering these, and they come up into my lawn, and they've come up into my strawberry bed, and I have to dig them out. It's the only way I can get rid of them, and I'm wondering if there's some other way that I can, you know, remove them so permanently, so I don't continue to have the problem year after year, because I'm putting holes in my lawn and I have to fill them up all the time. So.
How big are these? What do they look like, these mushrooms?
I'll tell you, they look almost like the white button mushrooms you can buy, the yeah. large white button mushrooms you can buy in a grocery store.
Yeah.
And they're just invasive.
Yeah, so you're exactly right. I mean, those the fungus is chewing on the remains of those dead roots, and that's its fruiting body. That's how it propagates. And there, unfortunately, there is not much you can do about that.
Time.
That's a very natural process, and there's really nothing other than physically removing them, whacking them back. There's nothing. That's just going to continue to happen
until
the roots are gone. Yeah,
fungus, once the roots are gone, then the fungus will be gone.
Yeah, yeah. That's just a natural decay process, and that's really common. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll have to check out to see if they're edible and harvest.
Well, yeah. Well, that's careful. The other thing. That's why I was asking what they look like, because if you were going to tell me they looked a little like a brain,
yeah,
I was going to say
Larry will take care of them for
I'll
you.
I'll come take care of them.
Oh, well, if I get them tested and find out they're okay, I'll send you somewhere.
All right, that's you should actually, if you've got somebody at Appleton, yeah, you should have somebody that is good with mushrooms. In your area,
mm-hmm.
and have them take a look, because I'm suspecting they're probably edible.
Okay.
All right. I mean, I wouldn't just
don't
take my word.
His word for
don't
it.
Take
yeah.
my word for it. But I'd sure as yeah. heck check it out, because if you're getting a lot of them, why not? I mean, you might decide you want to keep them there. Sarah in Sheboygan, your turn. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have some large areas that in the past have been mulched down with wood mulch, but I want to take up the mulch and actually plant grass there.
Okay.
And I know fall is the good time to plant grass, but
correct.
Another problem with these areas is that the mulch isn't really working and they're really weedy. There's a lot of Canada thistles and prickly lettuce and that kind of thing that's been coming up.
Oof.
So
okay.
How can I control the weeds this summer and then be okay to plant grass seed this fall?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Canada thistle is a really scary one, because that one is a perennial, really big rhizomes, likes to come back. It can tolerate mowing. So I would recommend using Roundup for that, because that one is so nasty. So what I would do is try to control it sometime this summer. You know, try it once. If stuff starts to come back, do it again. But definitely, mm-hmm. I would be really aggressive in getting rid of Canada thistle, because, like I said, that can come back and be really. You know, you don't want to step on that plant. That's an ugly one.
Right, and it's really. I know it's probably going to take more than one treatment, because they've been there for
it usually does.
Years. They really have a good hold on the area. So okay,
yep.
But Roundup would be the best thing to use. Then.
I think it would in this case.
Okay.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Doug Soldat, our guest today, soil scientist at the UW-Madison Turfgrass Specialist. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Thanks for listening in on this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest Doug Soldat, soil scientist at the UW-Madison Turfgrass Specialist. Always wonderful to have him along. Certainly you can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. post your questions, comments. Maybe you've got a photo to help things along. Love to have it posted right there on our Facebook page. And again, it's The Larry Mueller Show, the title of that page. Tim in New Berlin up next with a question. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Larry. I have a question for your guest.
Okay.
We have a place down in Delavan that we had some extensive landscaping done. They cut a couple feet of our backyard out to expose our view for us. And they planted seed and put the mesh down, and the grass came up, but I don't think they put topsoil down. And I asked the landscaper about it, and he said, because the ground is really hard, he said, well, it is a hard ground, but it's a porous ground, and when it rains, you know, the water does soak in. But like right now, the grass, this is going into its third year, it looks okay. But by the middle of summer to the end of the summer, we're only down there on the weekends. There's not enough watering on the grass that it keeps alive. It seems to brown out as the summer goes. And I was wondering if there's a different seed that we could try planting, or if there's something else that we can try to do to help the grass come in.
Yeah, Tim, that sounds like a soil issue. I think what happened is that you're right, they probably didn't use enough or the right topsoil. And so the difference between topsoil and subsoil is mostly organic matter. And organic matter gives it that dark brown, black color. And that organic matter is really important for holding and retaining water. And so it could be porous and the water could soak in, but if it doesn't have the organic matter to hold it, what you're describing is what I would expect would happen. The good news is grass produces a lot of its own organic matter, especially if you fertilize it twice a year, maybe three times a year. That will help it produce more roots, which then turn over and die and then create its own organic matter. That'll happen over time. So I think I don't think I would suggest renovating it. I think that was just it's an option for you to renovate it, bring in organic matter with more, you know, soil with more organic matter. But I think over time that problem is going to slowly start to subside. If you're already 3 years in, I think every year it's going to start to get better and better. But fertility is good for that.
And they said that, you know, the first 3 years that, you know, we shouldn't use a fertilizer. I mean, at this point, can we start to fertilize the yard?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Should've.
I don't know.
Why would they have said no?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure why they would have said no. That's probably more important when the grass is young and there's little organic matter. That's.
And what is the... Is it a 10-10-10 that I should use?
No, absolutely. Use the 10-10-10. I would recommend getting a fertilizer. Well, you should soil test your lawn to see if you need phosphorus, which is that middle number. But if you don't have, if your soil doesn't need the phosphorus, which is the case for most soils, it's illegal to apply it, actually. So you want a fertilizer with zero in the middle. And usually they have higher, like 29 or 25 as the first number. And then something like maybe 5 or 10 is the last number. But you want a fertilizer that's specific for lawns. Milorganite's a good kind of organic option. There's a lot of other organic fertilizers that you can use that also have carbon, which you're trying to build. So that might be a good route to go as well. Chickadee doo doo is one from Wisconsin that we've done research with. Chick Magic, so composted manures tend to perform pretty well.
Okay,
all right. Thanks a lot, Tim.
You can go with the compost, like Purple Cow compost is a local one here.
Yep, there you go. Dan in Oneida County. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I want to start planting some grass seed, and I'm wondering if the soil temperature has to reach a certain temperature before I can plant my grass seed.
Yeah, that's a great question, and you're absolutely right. Grasses need about 55 degrees before they'll start to think about germinating. So the warmer, the better, but 55 degrees is sort of that initial temperature where they start waking up biologically. And you can plan it before that, but you just expect not much is going to happen. Like our caller earlier with the bermed house, he hasn't seen much because the soils aren't warm enough yet. So temperatures right now are right about 50. So you're right about in that window when things will start to happen pretty soon.
There you go.
So I could plant it, and then it might take a few weeks.
It'll just take a little bit longer. Yep.
All right. Thank you. And I do have a comment about that moss.
Yeah.
I've used lime, put lime on the moss, and that seems to take care of it. I put it out in the fall, and then moss is gone in the springtime.
Hmm.
Okay.
I've had pretty good luck with that.
All right.
Another method, yeah.
Another method. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate the call. And let's turn to Mary in Eau Claire next. Hi, Mary. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question. We have a fair amount of lawn that actually died off last year, but this year I'm digging it up because it's starting to turn to weeds already. Anyways, I'd like to plant some kind of native species on it as a cover crop. Oh, last night I dug up a bunch, and my husband said, but what are you going to put on it? So what do I put on it? What's a good kind of native cover crop that, you know, I'd rather skip the perennial ryegrass, et cetera.
Yeah, so something that you want to mow or you don't want to mow this anymore?
It depends on how much maintenance there is.
Yeah. When is Neil coming on the show anytime soon?
I'm trying to think when he's next on. I think it's a few weeks yet.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, this is a tough one because if you don't know exactly what you're looking for, it's hard to know what to recommend. I would say a clover. So your main goal is why are you want to go with a different type of, you know, what are you trying to eliminate here?
Daddy, we just have a lot of native plantings and a little prairie patch and so forth.
Yeah, so you're looking for kind of a mixture of maybe grasses and forbs that...
Right, yeah, something like that.
Boy,
I'm just not quite sure how to begin.
I'd go online to Neil's, to Prairie Nursery.
Prairie Nursery, yeah. I wish I could give you a really good recommendation, but I spend most of my time dealing with those the lawn species particularly, and I'm not exactly sure what the best mix would be. I think it would be some type of prairie mix.
Yeah, probably a prairie mix, and certainly there are many places that you can go in Wisconsin. We mentioned Neil DeBoe of Prairie Nursery because he happens to be on the show from time to time. And if you went online to his website, there's a lot of different options that you could pick from.
Yeah.
And you could either have it mailed to you or go pick it up.
I'll tell you, one of my favorite, and this is sort of a hybrid, one of my favorite things we've been playing with is white clover mixed with Kentucky bluegrass.
Yeah.
And that clover really adds a lot of fertility, keeps the Kentucky bluegrass healthy, you get the bees coming in. That's kind of a hybrid mix from the traditional lawn, but it's not quite a prairie situation.
Kind of an old school lawn.
Yeah, old school. That's the way they did it before World War II.
Yeah, there we go. Worth a thought, Mary. Thanks a lot for calling. And Nathan in Elm Grove. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So we have a house that we purchased a couple of years back, and I was told that the backyard used to be an old apple orchard.
Yep.
We only have one apple tree left, but there's a lot of holes in the ground. The lawn is not smooth, and we're trying to figure out the best way to maybe fill that in or get that lawn smoothed out. So there are a few animal holes, but most of them, I think, are just settling of the ground, potentially.
Yeah. Hmm. I mean, are these big holes?
Yeah, how big are we talking?
Yeah, some are small, some are, I don't know, a foot in diameter.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, I think, you know.
So a variety of sizes.
Yeah.
Get a load of topsoil and a wheelbarrow, and I think fill them up is probably the best solution if it's settling. I would say, you said you're at an old apple orchard. My first thought is, have you had your soil tested for lead?
No.
I would really recommend that. Depending on the age of the orchard, lead arsenate was a really common pest control tool, and lead binds to the soil, and that can be a pretty important health hazard that you want to have tested.
Okay.
So I would
just pack the soil down and throw some seed on top?
Yep, pack that soil down, throw some seed on top, fertilize, a little bit of fertilizer, and then mulch it with, I like to use straw, barley straw.
Okay. I believe the yard also probably could use some aeration, too. Would you recommend doing that, maybe filling in the holes now and then aerating at the end of the season?
Exactly. You want to aerate in the fall, but go ahead and fill those holes now.
There you
Perfect.
Go.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks very Good much luck. For calling. Appreciate your call. We have, boy, we have lots of callers. We have got some emails here that I wanted to address, if I can find the start of one here. John said, for those who need a very precise weed killing, like for killing quackgrass, there's a company named Green Shoots, and it offers a product to do that very specific things. John says, I have no connection with them. I just happen to know about this particular business, and it's www.greenshootsonline.com. And I guess worth a look, huh? I guess it's always worth a look just to see what they've got and how they do things. And you know what? Maybe it could be some help. Do you know that company?
I don't know it, but I just pulled it up on my phone here, and it looks like it's a foam solution, so that you can use a non-selective chemical. And then the foam will just make sure it sticks right on it. But even quackgrass is tough because it just goes everywhere.
I
still think you're going to have a lot of trouble controlling quackgrass, no matter what the product or solution is. It's a tough one.
Doug Soldat is our guest today. He's an associate professor of soil science at the UW-Madison. He teaches, among other things, turfgrass nutrient and water management. Our guest on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your lawn today and the area around your lawn. You know, most of us would like to have something, a little bit of grass at least, and maybe some flowers to go along with it. Sometimes you feel like you have to use chemicals. Most of the time, I think most of us would rather not use chemicals if we can avoid it. And I know Doug Soldat, our guest today, has done an awful lot of research and work on what we might call low input or no input of chemicals. And so it's great, always great to have him come by to talk about spring lawn care, and I hope you'll join in with your questions. We have open lines now, so we can get you on almost immediately. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can post your questions or your comments there. And we have a Facebook question from Judy, who wondered if you could tell her a little about corn gluten.
Yeah, so corn gluten meal it's a byproduct of the corn milling process. And turf researchers at Iowa State figured out that if you put this waste product down, there's a chemical in it that leaches out into the soil and then prevents seeds from germinating. So it's a very nice natural alternative to pre-emergent herbicides. It also contains nitrogen, so it works as a nitrogen fertilizer. So for the folks that are interested in non-chemical or more alternative or natural weed control, this is a good one, and the timing to put it out is right now. So you want to put it down when the soil temperature is around 50, 55 degrees. This weekend is perfect. It needs that rain to activate it. I think we're going to have some rain in the forecast. And you put it down at about 20 pounds per 1,000 square feet. So you need a lot of the product. It is more expensive than the traditional pre-emergent herbicides, but it's pretty effective. It's not 100% effective, but we're talking maybe 80-85% effective. So it's kind of a neat product that you can try for these alternative no chemical situations.
We had a Facebook question from Megan. I'm going to be starting our lawn fresh this year. We're doing some landscaping right now, pretty full of weeds. We have sandy soil. What's a seed that would be best for the sandy soil before bringing in black dirt? Do you have any other suggestions for getting a lawn started off in a relatively weedy area?
Yeah, that's a tough one. So I think, and I'm a little bit confused when she says look for a seed before bringing in the black dirt. I guess maybe I'll answer.
I think she's what she means
instead
is
instead of bringing
them.
Yeah. Okay. So I think the best grass for these sandy soils is going to be fine fescue. And there's five different species that fall under this category of fine fescue. The best ones are chewings fescue or chewings fine fescue and hard fescue. And those two grasses do really well in sandy conditions. So I'm going to recommend those two types. But if you can only find a creeping red fescue, which is another type of fine fescue, that's okay too. But the chewings and the hard fescues are definitely...
Those are the two best.
Those are the best, yep.
Greg and Osseo, your turn. Hi, Greg. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. We did an addition on our house, and we disturbed all the soil around it, as normally happens. And now it's real sandy around there. We do plan on doing some black dirt, but we have a pile of sandburrs. Any suggestions on how to get rid of those?
I hate those things.
Yeah, they are.
So do our little Papillon dogs.
Yeah, right. I bet.
So, I mean, they're really difficult to control. The problem is they tend to thrive in lawns that are not well maintained, that are thin. So I mean, one of the best things you can do is just do things that promote a thicker lawn, and that's going to keep them out. As far as control, you can use pre-emergent herbicides. So like right now is the best time to prevent sandbird seeds from growing, because it is an annual. So go out, you know, right now with a pre-emergent. Get it in before the rain, and that's going to do a lot to keep those from germinating. But the next best thing you can do is fertilize the lawn, keep it thicker, and that's going to keep those sandburrs from coming back.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Tim in Phillips. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, I have pampas grass planted, a small patch of it planted over my drain field. Is that a long root type of grass that'll interfere with my septic, or should I start moving that thing?
Pampas grass.
It's a decorative grass. It grows very long, has a real feathery tassel on the end of it in fall.
Okay.
And it's very pretty.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering about the root system. Is it a deep root, or is it a shallow root?
I do not know specifically. It's probably – so does it spread when you plant it?
Yes, it's spreading out very nicely, and before it gets too spread, I need to know if I need to move it.
Yeah, I think I would, because it sounds like, and I'm not 100% sure, but I bet this thing has nice thick rhizomes that help it creep underground, and that's going to be a really, really thick root system that would be prone to clogging. So I would suggest that gets moved.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Tim. And Jeff in Greendale. Hello. Thanks for calling.
Good afternoon. Thank you. It's a two-part question.
Okay.
I rent, and my landlord puts what I believe is a low-input spray in the grass twice a year. Last year, I dug a path to my vegetable garden, and I put the sod in the vegetable garden. It's just sitting on top. Can I till that in the garden? That's part one. Part two is I got a little snow mold in the front lawn. Any quick solutions for that?
For snow mold, it's just time.
Okay.
Rake it out, and that'll help the soil warm up a little quicker and the grass regrow. But there's nothing, you know, the damage is already done. There's nothing you can do, and there's really no reason to reseed it.
Yeah, it's starting to come in, so.
Yep. Jeff, just a little bit more time, and I think next week we got 70s. It'll come around quick. So your question was, a grass that had been treated previously with an herbicide, can you till that into the garden?
Well, I haven't yet. I dug it up for a garden path, and it's sitting in the garden. Can I till that in, or should I just remove it?
Out of concern that the herbicide will hinder your gardening activities.
Correct.
Yeah. No, you should be able to till that in without a problem.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It's been a long time. But for sure, most of those, the residuals on those are
very short, and or they're bound tightly enough or inactivated by the soil. There are a handful out there. So Imprellis was one that's been taken off the market where that was a really big problem.
Yes.
But that has been off the market now for about 5 years, so the chances that that was sprayed are slim to none.
Dan in Marinette, thanks for calling. Hi.
Yep. Hi, Larry. I've got a patch in my front yard that is kind of similar to the fellow who called earlier, where he thinks he's got some roots under the soil that are sending up some fungi. And I know years ago there was a tree in this patch. And what happens is early in the summer, I'll get the grass that'll grow pretty good. But then by midsummer, it all starts to die off. And then by the time fall comes, there's some fungi that kind of show up. And this is a patch that's maybe about 4 feet by 2 feet, and it's like an arc. So I'm sure there's roots underneath there. The question I've got is, I want to resod it, and so how much of that do I need to remove? Because I'm afraid that is there like a toxin that's killing off the grass, and do I need to get all of that removed? Otherwise, it'll kill off the sod I put down. So what's my plan?
Yeah, I would doubt that it's a toxin. More likely, it's probably just physical restriction of the rooting.
Okay.
So I would, poke around there with a long-handed screwdriver or a spike and just see. You know, grassroots, really, you want to have 12 inches of soil. And so poke around. If you start hitting stuff, I mean, I found an area in my yard where there was like buried concrete or something. The grass would always wilt right on top of it. Same thing. So I think just removing whatever's there is important, and that's probably what's causing your problem.
Okay. So down about a foot, I mean, or just go down and see if I can find the roots and remove them?
Exactly. See what you can poke around and find down there. And it might just be really compacted. It might be like the soil's just harder there, and then you can do things like to try to loosen it up. But it sounds like it's a water availability from compaction or actually physical blockage.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. George in Madison. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a suggestion for the lady who was having a thistle problem.
Yep.
I had success defeating the thistles that plagued me. I heard from an expert that the plant puts all its energy making the flower, and this was like a half an acre worth of thistle. So I would just let the flowers form, and then at that point I would go in and cut them all down. I had to do it for a few years, but the plants were done by then. They only lived for 2 years, I think, and it worked.
Yeah, so thistles are tough. They're really adaptable. So that's a good recommendation, and that's one that takes care of a lot of weeds, is just constant mowing and whacking them down. But certain thistles can survive that. So they just start growing flat, and they don't ever get up real tall once you start mowing them. So they
The secret for me was actually from what you just said. I didn't ever mow them. I let them get real tall and make that flower. And then whack them.
Yeah, that, I think, you know, that's a really important component of control, is what you just said, is just letting them use all those resources and whack them down. But sometimes that still is...
Still hard.
Yeah.
Thanks, George.
Thanks, George, yeah.
Appreciate the call. It's a little bit of work, but, you know, you can do it. Donna in Madison, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I have a question, a perennial question, about creeping Charlie and violets in the lawn.
Go ahead, Don. I'm sorry.
I know this is probably a difficult question to answer, but I'm really interested in whatever you have to say.
So I'm already picturing your house. It's nice in the woods with all this deep shade and big trees. Am I right?
No.
No? You have a lot of sun?
Yeah, a portion of the lawn is in shade, and that's where the violets started, but now they're really colonizing all the lawn.
Okay.
Same thing with Creeping Charlie. I've worked on that 2 years now in the very early spring to dig it out, pull it out, Okay. Still having problems with
so,
that.
So, okay, I got good news and bad news. The good news is when you have full sun, both of those plants are really easy to control. And the bad news is the parts that are shaded, you'll probably never win that battle. So you don't want to dig either of these plants out because they just will grow back really quickly. So probably the best recommendation for getting rid of Creeping Charlie and violets in full sun is to put down a broadleaf herbicide that contains triclopyr. So that's one of the ingredients on the kind of in the fine print, triclopyr, T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R, and that is really effective against both of those plants. But like I said, it won't work in the shade because the grass can't fill in, and those plants are just so strong in the shade. In the full sun, an herbicide with triclopyr will be very effective. You want to put that down in October for best results.
Okay, can I ask one follow-up question?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So in the shade, is there anything I can do there to control the expansion of both of those?
Yeah, you can use the herbicide in the shade as well, but it's just less likely to be completely effective for you. You'll have to probably make repeat applications.
Okay, and then I also have been trying to take care of the grass in those locations, hoping that that would crowd it out or choke it out.
Yep. Absolutely, and so that's the long-term strategy is to thicken your lawn with fertilizing at least once, hopefully twice a year, and that will work in the full sun, but in the shaded areas, that fertilization can't really help the grass because the limiting factor is the sunlight, and that's where the violets and the Creeping Charlie come back. So in the full sun, fertilize twice per year. Use that herbicide in October. You should have good success. The shaded areas are going to be constantly battling.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Wayne in River Falls, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I've got a question. You guys were talking about clover and Kentucky bluegrass.
Yep.
I was wondering if that would work. Would clover survive in fairly dense shade?
Yeah, I don't think clover is the best plant for surviving in the shade. You could try it, and the thing is, Kentucky bluegrass isn't either. So I think
I've tried fescues and pine and chewings,
and those haven't worked.
And I've had a rough time.
Yeah,
put it that way.
If the fescues aren't working for you, there's probably no other grass that's going to work in that type of shade. And I would guess the clover wouldn't either. You can look at other types of shaded ground covers, like vinca comes to mind, and I'm sure there's some better ones out there that listeners could recommend. But yeah, if the fescue won't grow, I don't think anything else really will in that shade.
Okay, one comment. Now I've heard there was a question earlier. Guy was talking about dog spots.
Yeah.
No, I've heard that gypsum, you put that over it, does that help neutralize the soil at all?
I've heard that too. Put down about 50 pounds of gypsum per 1,000 square feet in November, right before it snows. I've heard that helps. I haven't experienced it. My guess is it may work for some people, but not everybody.
And I know people who swear by tomato juice. Feeding the dog tomato juice.
Right.
I don't know how much, but I can't remember the amounts now, but people just swear that that works. Why that would work?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I would say, talk to your vet about that one, I would say, before you change your dog's diet. But
yeah, I mean,
I've heard that too.
Pour it on top of the dog food is what people do, but I don't remember the amounts now. Probably online there's something, but... Last time we talked about this on the air, I got several emails from people saying, it works.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
All right, thanks. And let's turn to Joe in Onalaska. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I've got a friend, buddy of mine, that's an old retired farmer, and he gave me a bag of fertilizer that he used to put on his winter rye. And he's like, here, just put it on your lawn and spread it out. But the first number is 4600.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you put it on your lawn? I mean, it seems like it's a little high to me, but
no. Well, so it's That's urea. Okay, urea is probably the most commonly applied turf grass fertilizer in the world. So it's definitely good. How do you put it on your lawn, though? You want to put down 1 pound of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet. So that means urea is about 50%. It's 46% nitrogen. That's what that 46 means. So that means you want to put down 2 pounds of urea per 1,000 square feet. And that way you're putting down 1 pound per 1,000. So that's how you do that math. So you want to use about 2 pounds of that product for every 1,000 square feet you have.
And for every square. Okay.
Yeah, every 1,000 square feet. So that'll give you a real good response.
Uh-huh. So maybe you don't have any way to figure this out, but typically I put down like a Scotts or whatever, and that number...
It's going to be like a 29 or a 30, yeah.
Yeah, like a 30.
Yep. Yeah.
Can I put it down at the same spread rate, or should I dial it back a little?
You definitely want to calibrate your spreader because the spread rate is related to the particle size. And if the particle size isn't exactly the same, even though you think the spreader is the same, it's going to go down a way different rate. So what I do is I weigh out the fertilizer. So if, let's say you have 10,000 square feet, we're going to put up 20 pounds of urea. I put 20 pounds in my hopper, and I crank the spreader rate down really low, and I just keep walking back and forth on my lawn until it's all gone. And that way I knew I put down the exact right amount.
Super. That's a great tip. Thank you.
Yeah, I like that idea. I hadn't thought of it. Why wouldn't I have thought of that? Because I'm not as smart as you are, for goodness sakes. Doug Soldat, our guest today. We had somebody who wanted to know. Here we are talking about fertilizer. What's the best time to put on a spring application of fertilizer?
About Memorial Day. So, you know, Larry started off the show talking about how everything's really green right now, right? So this is, the grass doesn't really need fertilizer right now this time of year because it's getting all the nitrogen that kind of developed over the winter from dying roots and microorganisms. So that will start to run out end of May, and that's about the best time to put down some supplemental fertilizer. But right now it's too early.
Yeah, if you put it on now, grass grows faster.
Yeah.
Got to mow more.
It's already growing fast, and everything's green. Everything's green.
Everything is green. We have wondering what type of fertilizer you suggest for a lawn that is near water. Definitely want to avoid phosphorus.
Yep, absolutely. So the middle number should be zero because it's really important to keep the phosphorus out of the lake. Or the best thing to do is have a soil test to determine if you need phosphorus or not. And then in terms of the nitrogen, you want to have a slow release. So the fertilizer bag should say slow release nitrogen, and that keeps the nitrogen in the particle and only releases it slowly when the turf is ready to take it up.
So I'm wondering, too, just as we have the last minute here, are there some publications, some extension publications on lawns and lawn care, are there not?
Yeah, at the Learning Store. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the if you go to the UW Extension Learning Store, learningstore.uwex.edu, I think.
That's right.
You can go there, and you're going to find out a whole lot more about lawns. Doug, always a pleasure. Have you got some fun consulting or any? You do a little bit of work with the Brewers once in a while, do you?
Every once in a while, Mike Betcher will invite us out, and we get to see the challenges that he's faced with, and hopefully, you know, try to shed some light and help him out a bit. But that's probably one of the toughest places in Wisconsin to grow grass is Miller Park.
I would think, but it's also got to be a lot of fun to know that one of the students from here, from the UW, is the guy in charge over there.
Yes, he was a graduate from the horticulture department.
Yeah, very cool. Always a pleasure, Doug. Thanks so much. We'll look forward to your next visit. Appreciate
Thanks, Larry.
It. Doug Soldat, Associate Professor of Soil Science, Turfgrass Specialist with the University of Wisconsin-Madison, teaches turfgrass nutrient and water management, among other things. It's great to have him along, and he'll be back. Monday at 11, we talk with Deb Blum about effective science communication, what opportunities exist for better public education and awareness. And then at 11:45, the weather guys come by to share their opinions on the recent ban on some state officials relating to climate change. Thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.